This is Brock and Salk.
You want to go to the Seahawks game? All right, give me one more screen.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
I would put very little stock in what Brock Beard has to say.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app.
Salk, the third time in 2 days, is flat out wrong.
And 710sports.com.
Good morning, everybody. It is Brock and Salk. We are over at the Seahawks facility today to talk to Bobby Wagner, who will sit in with us at 8:30 for hopefully a little while. Get a little chat with Bobby, who is sort of the big leader around here these days. So we're looking forward to doing that at 8:30. But the story of the day is not Bobby. It is not the Seahawks who will be here for their voluntary OTAs.
It's not UW softball who advances to the Super Regionals and bless their hearts after sweeping away everybody over the weekend.
No, I don't think it is. It's these young Mariners, Brock, who are finding new, exciting, and different ways to win. Three games over the weekend. It's not a sweep because they lost Thursday night to Detroit. But after that, roaring back to take yet another series. Three out of four and three straight walk-off fashion yesterday.
Are we starting to see this team just turn over? Like, are we starting to see a team that was the Macho Quattro just a couple years ago with you and I down at spring training with Fernando Rodney? Don't turn over. He's not here. And Felix and Cano and Cruz and a Macho Quattro that was going to carry this thing. And we're seeing a new young batch of guys really take ownership of this
team. Well, I got some numbers here that may speak to some of that. Let me read these things to you. This took about 5 minutes of work last night.
You can read from that far away?
Yeah.
Wow. Good for you.
You can't?
No, I could not do that. You're sitting in a chair as I paint the picture, computer screen, I don't know, a good 4 feet from you.
Yeah.
At least. All right. Bless your heart.
I can see it just
read
fine.
The prompter. Go
I
ahead,
can read
Burgundy.
It over near you if I have to.
Okay.
Since Robinson Cano got hurt, the Mariners are 5-2. They are 4-2 since he was suspended the next day. So, by the way, only 74 more games to go
and
without
counting.
Robbie. They are also 27-19, of course, on the year. Robinson Cano has been hurt and suspended. Nelson Cruz has been hurt on and off throughout the year and is fourth on the team in home runs. He has not had any sort of great year so far. Kyle Seager is hitting a whopping 2.28, yeah. And Felix Hernandez has an ERA over 5.5. Those are the four best players, and I'm going to put those words in quote, the four best players coming into the year. That's the core. That's the nucleus.
Yeah, that's
talking about the core of the Mariners.
Making,
that's the group you're talking about.
Making 60%, 70% of your money?
You're talking about, yeah, Howdy, see if you can, or Lydia, see if something, one of you guys can do a few minutes of research.
Mucho grande dinero.
Figure out what the four of those players are making in comparison to the Mariners' entire budget.
Howdy's got that database. He and Shanny talk about it all the time.
So, Robinson Cano is hurt, suspended, and not going to be back for most of this year. Nelson Cruz is hurt. He is fourth on the team in home runs this year and has not been a major factor in what they've been doing. Kyle Seager is hitting 228. 228. He's not been good at all. And Felix Hernandez has been middling at best with an ERA of 5.5. The Mariners are 27-19, alone in second place, and Brock off to their best start in forever.
Yeah, and
it's remarkable.
Yeah, and at this juncture last year, at this point in the season, they were 6 games under 500. They are 14 games better than they were at this point a season ago at 27-19. And I feel badly just giving credit to one person or two. It is an entire young core that is really growing up before our eyes. It is, I think, Segura and Haniger right there with that list. D. Gordon's a little bit of an older player that, you know, but he brings a youthful, energizing, you know, way. Paxton's not 22. He is 28. He's been around the block a few times, but it is, you know, and Mike Zunino, who, by the way, is just owning everything behind the plate, and you hear from every one of these pitchers and every one of these relievers and Eddie Diaz and all of them and Paxton of what he is doing for them behind the plate and, you know, hitting finally above 200 again. But my goodness, we are watching a young core, you know, emerge and grow up. That if you ask me who is the team here, who is the leadership of the team, who is carrying this team, it's not those four that are making the loot. It is really those four to five guys that have just kind of taken this thing with their energy and running with
it. Yeah, I mean, Gene Segura and Mitch Haniger, obviously, both of them yesterday coming up with big plays and Yeah, Heredia, who's provided some of that spark, and Zunino, who, yeah, there's no doubt you are seeing a youth movement on this team start to be a little bit more of the group that has carried them. But I think when that happens, Brock, you got to start looking beyond the players, the 25 guys on the roster, to why you are having success. You're in year three of Scott Service's regime. He has done a heck of a job every year at spring training in forcing this team to come together, and the chemistry has been so important to him. It's probably not a surprise that you sit here after your third walk-off win of the year and third in like the last couple of weeks, and Scott is raving about how this team doesn't have any quit in them.
The heart that this club has is pretty impressive. It really is. You know, these guys, they just keep battling through adversity, one thing after another. We've got some injuries. We've got some guys out of lineup. We've got guys hobbling around out there. You know, it is bite your lip and keep going.
Remember all those years that we would come in here and there would be a 4-0 game and it would just be 4-0. It just unfortunately be a lot of zeros, and we would hear either Wedge or Lloyd McClendon or Donald Wakamatsu or any of those guys tip their cap to the other side and say, well, you know, there's some good at-bats, there was this or that, but we couldn't get anything going. It was 4-0 as it was Friday night. And you just lost that game 4-0. Maybe you got a run in late. Or, you know, it's 2-0 and you're getting no hit into the sixth or the seventh inning. Well, you just tip your cap. I mean, Liriano just was brilliant. He just had this stuff. He's a bit, you know, couldn't do well. Which he was pretty good yesterday.
He was
fastball slider command was about all he needed.
Yeah.
And he just kind of mowed you down. He looked up and it's just goose egg after goose egg after goose egg. I mean, I remember those games because Felix was in his prime and Cliff Lee was dominant. Both those guys, they put up a lot of zeros too. You just couldn't do anything. And when you fell behind, the game was over. It was over. And it just is not that way with this crew more than anything else. What, fourth in the American League and comeback wins with a dozen? You know, the league leaders you see there, Boston and New York, the team's right there ahead of you. And that's it, is you sit right now with the second wild card because of your ability to do just that, to take apart bullpens, to beat bad teams, to come from behind, to be 3-0 in extra innings, to have three walk-off wins, to have 12 comeback wins. And I think really you point to that young core of guys as being the impetus for so much of that.
Yeah, and immediately you see the text. Stop, just stop, guys. 710-710, powered by Coors Light. Salk, the Mariners do this every year. They'll fall apart at the end of the year like always. Stop, you will be a fool again. You might be right.
A June swoon is coming. Just wait. A June swoon is on its way.
But you, there's a good chance you're right. I have no I am not banking on this team being great. I have no idea whether this team is going to be as good as their record is right now. I do think that they look different. And that doesn't mean they're better. I mean, and that doesn't mean they're the only team that's fun or the only team that can come back. I mean, Brock, we've said that before.
Well, you're looking
you
at
remember as soon as Nelson Cruz, the day Nelson Cruz came to Seattle, there was instantly a sense that this team would find ways to come back in games. Remember they won that great Sunday walk-off game where they came back against the A's four times and Cruz hit a great walk-off hit back through the hole. And everyone's like, oh, my God, this is different. We've said that 30 times.
Oh, and Dejo was fun 2 years ago. He was so fun. And
we have seen a team that has comeback ability. That is not new for the Mariners this year. But this one is different because it is not being led by the four guys that, as Howdy comes up with here, are making almost 45% of the team salary.
Yep.
Is caught up in Robinson Cano, Nelson Cruz, Kyle Seager, and Felix Hernandez. More than half. 55% of the money budgeted for this season goes to those four guys. and they are not the four that are carrying you. I mean, Robbie was having a good year before he got hurt and suspended, but now he is. He's gone. And you've been just as good, if not better, since he's been out. It's been D. Gordon. It's been Mike Zunino. It's been Guillermo Heredia. It's been Gene Segura. It's been Mitch Haniger. You are talking about a different group of people. Ryan Healy, who's second on the team in home runs, despite missing a couple of weeks. It's been a completely different group who has found ways for this team to win. And then obviously the changing of the guard with James Paxton clearly emerging as the ace of this staff with a complete game victory over the weekend. Diaz, who has just been, he's been as good as he gets.
Yes.
He's been phenomenal. I mean, I know Scott blew it yesterday by using him in a tie game instead of a save situation. It's amazing he was able to even get to the mound without tripping, let alone actually get through a fairly clean inning. But all those things happened, and this team right now is playing some of the best ball I can remember.
Well, and because of it, we're going going to have a, I think, a good debate here in about 20 minutes after Clayton as far as what was the moment of the weekend. You won all three over the weekend. You lose Thursday night in a heartbreaking fashion. And in many ways, that's kind of like what I said earlier. If this team's ability to respond in years past, you lose that game, you're just going to lose a couple others. Remember all the teams that came into Seattle and said, we can't wait to play them. Well, I always love coming to Seattle, right? Those guys lay down. This team's not laying down. They're 8 games over .500, and they're sure having a lot of fun.
They're not laying down. They're having fun. Us too. 7:10. Time
need to know the voice of Seattle sports.
Brought to you by VenueKings.com.
Here's what you need to know up first.
Everybody's excited today, apparently. The Mariners beat the Tigers on Friday. The Mariners beat the Tigers on Saturday. The Mariners beat the Tigers on Sunday and pushed themselves to 8 games over .500 for the year. Dramatic comeback win on Friday after being down 4-0 early. I think that's actually the biggest win so far this year. James Paxton was dominant on Saturday night with his second complete game of the year and of his career. And then yesterday, what a walk-off, come-from-behind victory. Mitch Haniger first breaking up the no-hit bid, then going yard in the ninth with one out to tie the game at two apiece, and then finally Gene Segura, the big hit to drive in Dee Gordon, who had singled as well. What a game, man. That was Mariners baseball the way it's supposed to be done, with some really good pitching performances thrown in. Wade LeBlanc was great once again, Brock, and obviously Paxton, so kudos to them, man. That is, it is fun to find different ways to win ball games.
Yeah, here's what you need to know. The Mariners are 14 games better than they were a season ago. A season ago where I think they really banked on them being competitive and being able to have enough to compete for a playoff spot. And ultimately, obviously, that did not happen. And they're in this position because of a lot of the new faces that are getting it done. And they're doing it in every way. They did it over this weekend with pitching on Saturday. Paxton was dominant. Second complete game of the season. 20 teams in baseball don't have a complete game by anybody on their roster. He's now got two of them. He's going to be the American League Pitcher of the Month. You can bank on that as well. They did it with comeback variety. They did it with power. They did it with playing some defense. They did it exactly the way you're going to have to do it over the course of this season to play the kind of ball they're playing right now.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Well, there's no doubt that as the Mariners are turning this team over to their younger core, it seems to be having great success. Talking Segura, Haniger, Paxton, Diaz, Gordon, Zunino. Those right now seem to be the players that are getting it done day in, day out, while Cruz, Seager, Felix, Robinson Cano, obviously, etc., have provided more of the veteran experience instead of sort of the core nucleus of this. If you're looking for an example, obviously, yesterday is a pretty good one, just seeing what those younger guys did. But since Robinson Cano exited the lineup first with the injury, Gene Segura is 12 for 29. He's hitting .414 with two doubles, a triple, a home run, and four steals in the walk-off yesterday. So, obviously, he has upped his game. And then, if you want to just take a look at Mitch Haniger's stats on the year, they're tremendous. Rather than looking at each one individually, I'll just point to his OPS, his on-base plus slugging, which is .951.
Yeah.
That is all-star level or above. That is a tremendous season. Combined with his defense, his running, everything else he brings, Mitch Haniger is having a hell of a year.
Yeah, and Mr. Segura is too. .400 with runners in scoring position. The big blow yesterday to win it late. 3-0 in extra inning games. A little Titus and I were driving around between basketball games and baseball games over the weekend. Said, who's going to be their all-stars? Felix going to be an all-star this year, Dad? Nope. Cruz going to be an all-star? Nope. Cano going to be an all-star? Obviously not. Nope. Nope. He's not. Well, who are going to be their all-stars? Well, to be honest with you, I don't know if they're going to get their credit, but Diaz is knocking the door down. He's been the most electric closer in baseball.
Diaz, Paxton, and Haniger will be all-stars.
I think.
And unfortunately, Gene Segura will lose
that's
out
exactly
because
right.
His name is not as big as some of the Lindor and Correa and some of the other great young shortstops.
And I think nothing points to where this direction and where this Gregorius. Team is going than that conversation.
Yeah.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
I'm excited to be outraged on his behalf, though, I'll tell you that. We're out at Seahawks today. Team headquarters, they're going to begin voluntary organized team activities later today. Now, this is where they're actually kind of out there practicing.
Phase three.
Three practices this week. Of course, the question is, will Earl Thomas report? By all accounts, he will not. So I don't know how big a question this is going to be. Regardless, we will talk to the emerging leader of this team. That would be Bobby Wagner. He'll be with us at 8:30 this morning.
Yeah, as you shift into phase three, Mike, if we were allowed to be out there watching, it won't be until Thursday that the media can be out here for practice. It looks like training camp. right? Other than the pads, other than the people on the berm and everything else, the structure of practice, this is one of these nine. And these reps are so unbelievably valuable because they don't get many of them. You know, the coaches, any coaches that has been that have been in this league for decades will tell you these are more precious than ever because the quantity has been so cut down with the amount of work. This is 11 on 11. This is 7 on 7. This is O-line, D-line. This is one-on-one. This is the ability, unlike the other phases, where you can actually now compete and go up against one another.
But they can't hit.
You can't. Well, they don't hit anyway, even in training camp.
But can they contact, like on O-line, D-line, can they smash into each other?
Yeah, you know, got them, you know, suspended for some workouts in years past. Right. But as far as the structure of it, as far as the competition of it, yeah, this is as cranked up as it gets in the offseason.
All right, there you go. Three things you need to know, of course, every single morning at 7:10. No professor today, Brock. Surprise.
Oh, he's traveling the owner's meetings. That's right.
Guest.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Saul.
If you want to take care of him now. The price is only going to go up.
Brought to you by Divorce Lawyers from N.com.
He's too important to let go. You're not trying to
totally break everything down.
Plus, a wild card.
What magic trick would you like to be able to perform?
Yeah, I can maybe try to have you disappear. That could be nice.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Salk.
Good morning to Brady Henderson of ESPN. Hi, Brady. How are you?
Hi, Mike and Brock. How are you?
Oh, we're doing great, buddy. We're doing great. It was nice hanging out with you a little bit on Friday, spending some of the day with you as well. And if you could be here, Brady, let me start with this football question. If you could be here today, you're not allowed, the media's not allowed, but if you could be here today, what would you be most excited to watch as phase three begins and these guys get to compete against one another?
You know what? It's tempting to say thinking about a certain player, like one of the new free agents or one of the rookies, but I think I would actually be most drawn to sort of the rapport between Brian Schottenheimer and Russell Wilson. And this is the first time Russell Wilson in his career has had a new coordinator. And everything we've heard from Pete Carroll, the one thing that he has mentioned every time he's talked about Brian Schottenheimer is how hands-on he's going to be. In fact, I think he was on your station, on your show, as a matter of fact. And I think he actually mistakenly said that he's going to be the quarterback coach, even though he's not going to have that title. I think, you know, Dave Canales is kind of going to be like a surrogate quarterback coach. But that just goes to show how hands-on it sounds like Brian Schottenheimer is going to be. And that's a very important relationship. And so much of the conversation about, you know, what are the Seahawks going to do next season or next offseason when Russell Wilson, you know, becomes eligible for that extension. And I think a big part of that, too, is how is Russell going to view that? Because that's a very important relationship for him, and he's obviously going to want to make sure that that's a good marriage you know, before he commits to it long term. So that's something that I'm going to keep an eye on, is just how those two kind of work in connection with each other, how they relate, and really how hands-on Brian Schottenheimer is going to be with Russell Wilson.
Will Earl be there today or this week?
I tend to not think so. No, we're still in the voluntary part of it. You know, Pete Carroll, when he was asked about it a couple weeks ago at the end of the rookie minicamp, you know, he kind of indicated that he didn't expect Earl to be there for the rest of the voluntary stuff. Now, we'll see, you know, when mandatory minicamp rolls around, that's mandatory for veteran players. That's when you start talking about fines for guys missing that, you know, without an excused absence. And even then, that said, you know, it's 80, I think, if you miss all 3 days, the fine this year, the total amount is something like $85,000. If Earl Thomas really wanted to make a point, you know, I could see him missing that. I could also see in a case where, you know, maybe he shows up, but he doesn't actually, you know, practice, doesn't take part in the workouts. I think Michael Bennett has done that in the past, at least for some of the OTA stuff. So, and also, you know, you look back at the history, the two guys that have held out under this regime, Cam Chancellor and Marshawn Lynch, those guys didn't actually hold out until training camp. They were actually at the mandatory mini camp, and then it wasn't until training camp that they started missing time. So the point being, I could kind of see it go either way, but I also think you could actually see Earl Thomas there just not doing anything.
Does it matter?
How's that for an answer?
Yeah, pretty good, but also, too, let's put it this way. Does it matter that he's here or not?
I think if he's here for the mandatory minicamp, or at least here for the OTAs, I think that could be a sign that, yeah, you know, he is willing to work with you. And, you know, John Schneider had the comment, I think, before the draft that he had heard from Earl Thomas's agents that Earl wasn't going to hold out. And that was, of course, kind of the, you know, the assumption that we had all along based on what Earl had said from the Pro Bowl in January was that, you know, he didn't see himself going out there without a new contract. So the assumption has been he's going to hold out. And I don't think that's something that John Schneider would, you know, make up or just kind of stretch the truth there. I think that, you know, I think there's reason to believe that. So, and if he's there, even for the voluntary stuff, I think that would be a good sign.
You know, the rookies had their chance in their own mini camp a couple of weeks ago, and now they got to get thrown in there with all the veterans. Which rookies would you expect to be able to hold their own right off the bat?
Yeah, I think that the guy I'm most interested in is Rasheem Green, their third round pick. You know, I think of all the guys, obviously Rashad Penny, you know, in terms of guys who can make an immediate impact, I think Rashad Penny is at the top there because, you know, you draft a running back in the first round, you expect that guy, I think, to start relatively quickly. But Rasheem Green is another one. I think that, you know, they drafted him for a very specific role. You know, it's that interior pass rusher that they've been searching so hard to find for so many years, going through so many different guys. It's why they spent such a high pick on Malik McDowell last year. He seems to kind of have the body type that you look for, and you know, he's only 20 years old, and so you know, you kind of wonder about how developed he might be physically. But you know, he seems like a guy who can hold his own there, and you know, I think he's going to have a chance to make an immediate impact. Obviously, you know, we're in May right now. You're not going to this is not the time to make any definitive statements. So it's not like we're going to, you know one way or another after this weekend how, or after, you know, these next couple of weeks, how easily he's going to fit in. But I think he's a guy that, you know, of the rookie class, he and Rashad Penny, I think, and obviously Shaquem Griffin as well. But Rasheem Green is one guy that I'm going to keep an eye on.
Hey Brady, last thing for me here. We're going to have Bobby in here in about an hour, which is why we're down at the Seahawk facility today. Can his role grow? Can his captainship and his voice on this defense with so many of the people around him departed, do you think he can grow in any manner in that way?
Absolutely, yeah, and I think so because, you know, this seems like with all of the offseason moves, all the players that they've lost and all the coaches that they've lost too. Remember, Richard Sherman, gone. Cam Chancellor, he's going to be there, but, you know, in all likelihood, it doesn't seem like he's going to be playing. Their defensive coordinator, you know, Chris Richard, who was their secondary coach. I think what you're seeing is this defense is going from one that has been led by its secondary and been led by all those big personalities in the Legion of Boom, the one that is now going to be led by its linebackers. And I don't think it's any coincidence that you've got, you know, your defensive coordinator who replaces Chris Richard is your former linebackers coach in Ken Norton Jr. So I absolutely think that Bobby Wagner, you know, when you look at the longest tenured guys on that defense, it's him and Earl Thomas. And as we know, I don't think that's really in Earl Thomas's nature to be that leader. He's more of a keep to himself kind of guy. So I absolutely think that this is going to be, you know, Bobby Wagner's defense to lead this year.
Brady, I know you've been studying, so here's your wild card.
Time now for the wild card. What
wild card? Mr. Brady Henderson, in what ways are you living your life hashtag unlimited?
Stop it.
Hashtag, can you tell me what that means? Hashtag unlimited.
Yeah, so Russell Wilson created an alter ego, and it is actually, it's
hashtag. Unlimited. Oh my God. You got to be unlimited. You know, you got to have a thought process of being unlimited. So when people ask you.
So in what ways are you living your life, hashtag unlimited?
I would say as a single guy who was in kind of the least busy time of the NFL offseason, I am playing hashtag unlimited golf right now.
Brady, how much fun did we have on Friday night?
Oh, it was the best. It was awesome.
Brady and I played 36 rounds, 36 holes of golf, and then went to Snoqualmie. Played some cards.
Yeah. We took that casino for all the money it had. I won $8 there. Paid for the two beers I had.
It was pretty good.
Awesome.
Yeah. All right, Brady.
You nailed the names today, Brady. Way to go, buddy.
Yeah.
You were all over it as always.
Jim Green. We appreciate
that. I hope you guys are doing well.
All right.
Thank you. We are.
See ya. There goes Brady Henderson. You can read him at ESPN.com. I can attest he's been working real hard over there.
What would be your alter ego?
I don't know.
Hashtag what?
I can't talk about this. I'm not willing to talk about hashtag unlimited. I'm sorry. There are certain things that just stop it. There are certain things that probably can't make the show.
Right.
I don't see how we can talk about that.
Can the textoid tell you what your alter ego would be?
I don't think so.
What is Salk's alter ego?
I don't think it's a good idea for us to talk about hashtag unlimited.
Okay.
I think if we play it for long enough, people will like turn it off because the nail's on a chalkboard. And like, I just, I don't, I don't want to make fun of it.
No,
like,
no,
Russell.
I got,
I'm
got you.
Disturbed by it. I think it's problematic for the team.
I got you.
I don't know how. I don't know how anybody can continue to work with them. Like, it's bad. It's really bad. It's the worst thing. I think it's worse than the Super Bowl loss. Like, I don't know. All right, coming up next, we're just going to change tune here because I can't do this, Brock. I warned you.
We don't have to. We're not going to.
Thank God.
I'm not saying it.
Please go back to the
Stop it, Howdy. Stop playing that.
Three over the weekend, which was phenomenal. Here's the question. What was your favorite moment of the weekend for the Mariners?
Ooh.
There's a bunch to choose from. I've got mine. Brock's got his. Howdy had a third. Lydia definitely with another. You can all weigh in. 206-421-3776. What was your favorite Mariner moment this weekend? It's next on Brock and Salk.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
this is Brock and Salk.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com.
That's very high. I think everybody understands that, you know, we want to get into the playoffs desperately. And, you know, you need to have a few breaks go your way along the way. But you certainly have the talent to do that. And there's no doubt we have the character in our clubhouse to do that. So it doesn't make it any easier. But, you know, going forward, that's where our mindset is at.
Heck of a weekend for those Mariners, man. They come back to win three straight after losing the opener of the series to Detroit. It's Brock and Salk here on 710 ESPN Seattle and on 710sports.com, 710 Sports app as well. Hope you're enjoying your morning and Monday getting back to work. And Mariners have a much-needed off day today, which is good. Give them a chance to rest after what has been kind of a little marathon here. And really sort of one of those like sprint marathons where you're doing both at once, it feels like, just sprinting forever and ever and ever. But they had quite a weekend, man. We were just trying to see if we could come up with our favorite moment, and it was interesting to see how quickly it got split just among the group of us. So we figured we'd open it up to you guys. And we'll have the phones open a lot today to talk some baseball. So if you have something you want to say, phone lines will be there for you. 206-421-3776, the number 206-421-3776. Brock, what was your favorite moment of the week?
Yeah, my favorite moment, and I took some photos of this, and I tweeted it out Friday night, was Eddie Diaz throwing 98 at the chin of Iglesias. That little gnat had been nothing but a pest to you. He had had big hits. He had the big hit to win the game the night before, a game you had no business losing, and Detroit had no business winning, which, you know what? You flipped the script over the weekend. The Mariners largely had no business winning Friday night down 4-0, or Sunday, yesterday, being no hit through seven innings, but they found a way to flip the script, and Iglesias was the energizer. He did it in Detroit with big hits, winning that series. He did it Thursday night, and he was diving in, and all of a sudden, 98 came his way. And I don't know if it was intentional or not. Eddie misses arm side, especially with his fastball at times. So I'm not saying it's intentional, and I'm not listening to anybody say, "Wow, Zunino was set up outside." Because after the fake shake, I'm not taking any of that stuff, you know, as gospel. But all I know is Iglesias went down on all fours. Those guys in their dugout rose up. Lloyd McClendon was sitting there; his head popped up even in that picture too. And Iglesias went 1-for-8 after that moment, and no more big hits. And to me, it was a bit of a tone setter, and if Eddie Diaz has got to be the guy to do it, when you throw 98 to 100 miles an hour, that can set the tone.
Yeah, that was pretty good. There's no doubt. I mean, anytime you wanna send a message, and you're sending it with a guy who can throw between 98 and 100, maybe not 105 like the kid in St. Louis was throwing yesterday, but still 98 to 100 with a ton of movement.
Yep.
His 98 to 100 is faster than some other people's, if that makes sense. There is, you know, there are guys who throw straight downhill 98 and you can see the ball all the way and you don't see a lot of swings and misses. Guys get right on it. Yeah, it's hard, but a major leaguer can catch up to 98 or 100 as long as you sort of can see it well.
Yeah, Eddie's all arms, elbows, wrists, knees. The whole thing is flailing at you.
His 100 gets on you fast.
It sure does.
His 96 gets on you fast. Even when he doesn't have the good stuff, he just seems to have such an ability to make it to get
it. Yeah, I stood
faster.
Up, man. I stood up. I like that. Yeah, I stood up and I just said, yes. Yes, no more just taking it. Getting hit more than anybody else in this game and being so easy to come into. And teams in Iglesias winning it Thursday and felt like he was going to get that big hit Friday. No, you're not. No, you're not. Enough. Enough. You're not just coming into our ballpark and playing free and easy. We're gonna throw a little gas your way. I love that.
I would agree. Lydia, what was your favorite moment of this weekend?
You know, this is like the worst thing that you could ask of me, choosing favorites. But other than Heredia lifting up Segura, after that game-winning walk-off
it's
yesterday.
Not that. Why
it's not that.
Okay, because you said it was that.
I thought about it because you put me on the spot. It was when Haniger hit the RBI on Friday.
Yes.
And in the seventh inning, it capped off that huge inning where they scored five runs, come from behind. It was 5-4 at that point. Cut to D. Gordon and Mike Zunino in the dugout. And it is the just pure joy and elation on both of their faces. I think it encapsulates exactly what the Mariners are about right now, which is we're not going to quit at any point in this game. We might be down four runs, but it doesn't matter.
Here comes the 2-2 pitch. Swung on, lasered down the left field line. That's a fair ball rolling to the corner. Around third base, here comes Heredia. Segura into third, he's safe. Haniger into second, he's safe. Clapping his hands together, puts his thumbs in the air. Thumbs up for Haniger as the Mariners have taken the lead. Mitch Haniger drives in the run, and the M's now on top. It is 5-4 here.
Yeah, what was the thing we liked from the gamer? Download complete, the guy said. Comeback complete at that point. Down 4-0 and generally looking like that was just going to be a game that was a lost cause. Mitch Haniger completes it. You could make a little montage just of joyful, joyous moments from this weekend, Lydia.
Also, the thumbs up is the new thing. Yes. Whenever they get on base, and I've decided to believe that it's them saying, get on up, baseball.
It is.
Because I think that they heard that song and they enjoy it so much.
Why wouldn't you say that? I mean,
right?
sort of the anthem, I would think, of this year.
There
it is.
Woo! Yeah, and they go thumbs up to the kind of to the beat of it, right?
Yeah.
Way to go, Lydia. Way to go. That was your song.
You have the joy of those two guys in the dugout. There's obviously, as you mentioned, the joy of Heredia and Segura meeting last night after the walk-off hit. How about the joy on Gene Segura's face when Haniger hit the home run? Because that was my favorite moment of the weekend, was Haniger's home run yesterday. And as good as it is, if you're just looking for joyful reactions, look at Gene Segura, who turns around to watch it, takes a couple of hopping steps, and doesn't need to keep watching it. I mean, he knows that ball is gone. It is way out. But he's watching it just for the thrill of seeing how far Haniger could hit a baseball. This was probably my favorite moment of the weekend.
Two pitch, swing and a drive. Deep to left field. Going. Upper deck. Goodbye, baseball. Mitch Haniger ties it up here in the bottom of the ninth inning with his 11th home run of the year. Mariners 2, the Tigers 2.
Happy birthday, Mitchie the Kid, man! That was a heck of a way to come back in that game as well. And I'll tell you, we've talked about confidence and what it means. The one thing I will say is, once he hit that home run, I knew they were going to win that game yesterday. It did not dawn on me that they would lose that game after tying it up. And I do think, yeah, some of that is being at home instead of on the road and all that. But
even when Service made the mistake of bringing Diaz in
a
non-save situation.
Closer in a tie ball game in the 10th. And, I mean, obviously there's no way he could have possibly gotten up to pitch in that game. It's not the situation he's used to. And yet, somehow, some way, the best pitcher on this team was able to persevere and get through that inning and eventually allow them to win it in the 11th.
Quirky question for you. Does Haniger have loose ankles? Because, you know, I had a friend of mine, my roommate in college, his sister had loose ankles. Poor thing had to wear ankle braces all the time. Just walking around, she'd just twist her ankles. She'd roll that ankle, so she had to wear ankle braces all the time.
Okay.
Watch his left ankle, and you'll see this a bunch when he truly, and when you hear the term uncork or unwind or whatever, that's exactly what he does on his swing.
Yeah.
Like, he rolls, like, if that was, I would sprain my ankle. If that was you, you would sprain your ankle. He is just full force into that sucker as he uncorked. And, Mike, I don't know, man. We've given a lot of credit to a lot of people this year. At 27-19, we've had our days of D. Gordon, right? We've had our days of Gene Segura. We've had our days of Mike Zunino. We've had our days of Mitch Haniger, obviously. But, man, if you start to really look at it, and Service said it yesterday, you know, Segura and Haniger have carried this team. They've carried this team. They're why they're 27-19. You know, it's not necessarily their starters. Paxton's had some brilliant month. It's certainly not their bullpen. Eddie's been nails at the end, but man alive, without Segura and Haniger, they would not be anywhere near where we're sitting today.
206-421-3776. Grab Chris, who's in Marysville. What's up, Chris?
Hey, how's it going?
Good, dude.
Favorite moment of the weekend?
I am totally excited about this team having just no quit in it. They have, with two come-from-mind victories, didn't basically shut out for 17 innings or 16 innings or whatever.
Yeah.
And then coming from behind late in the games, it's just awesome to watch. Don't feel like we've had that in the past, and these guys are not quitting at all right now.
Yeah, I appreciate the phone call.
Right-handers 1-2 on the way to Segura. Swinging a ground ball, fair inside the bag at first on the right field line. Gordon waved around third, heading home. He scores. Gene Segura with a walk-off single to win it.
by a score of 3-2 here in the bottom of the 11th inning. Segura getting mobbed out there around the bag at second.
Yeah, it was pretty good, man. There were a lot of great moments. Throw in the Paxton complete game from this weekend.
Throw in over 35,000 a game.
How about Haniger's little flip catch over tumbling into the crowd. So there are a lot of great moments. I think this team is different. I think they're fun. I don't believe, as a lot of people have said, that this thing feels different because they can come back and win. We've seen that for 3-4 years now.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm just the Deho Lee comebacks and the Adam Lind walk-offs and the Mike Zunino home run games the last couple years.
Yep.
I'm sorry, we have seen this before.
Yep.
Please stop with the, oh, this is just different. I've never seen the Mariners do this before. They've done a lot of this over the last couple of years. They've done it a little bit more consistently this
year.
They're doing it with some different players leading the way. There are some things that are different, but I'm not buying this whole, well, this is a totally new idea that the Mariners can hit and come back. They've done that now for 3-4 years, don't you think?
They have, but when you're sitting in a dirty dozen right now, 12 comeback wins, and in the seventh inning and later, and getting that, you know, the clutch, it's a new faces doing it, Mike. It's not Seager doing it. It's not Cruz doing it. It is the new faces that are a big part of it.
Segura and Zunino and Heredia and the guys who have been really contributing to do it. It is D. Gordon, certainly. You know, don't lose sight of his leadoff hit yesterday that sets the scene for that whole thing. As Servais said, he's nursing a sore ankle. He still manages to steal second base. And because of that hit and that single, or that hit and that steal, he's ready to come around on that single instead of maybe having to try to score from first. So it was a really fun weekend. We'll be talking a lot more about the Mariners throughout the course of the morning, including coming back to them here in 20 minutes. After Coors Light's Blue 42, Bobby Wagner will join us at 8:30. Is he the type of player you can build around? That's my question for you next. I'm Brock and Salk.
Here we go.
This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, G, U corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready, right.
Blue 42 is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42!
Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Blue 42! Blue 42!
Oh, time for Coors Light Blue 42. Brock and I are just amusing ourselves right now.
Dude, your memory is shot.
Yeah.
Your hearing so-so. Your vision.
It's amazing.
I was marveling at you reading your computer screen. Kyle, you'd love this. We're sitting in the studio here at the VMAC because Bobby's going to join us in 45 minutes. And I'm at a distance writing really small on a piece of paper. Probably, I don't know, 4 yards from Salk, holding him up like an eye test. And he is crushing it. He is killing it.
Hasn't even been a challenge.
No.
You're going to have to probably go out there.
I wrote Kitty Cat.
I didn't see anything in this.
I wrote Haley Heward in probably a size 8 font. And you nailed
you wrote
both
Kitty
of them.
Cat?
Yeah, there... first thing he wrote was Kitty Cat, which just made me think of wet scratchers.
Hold on. Here it's
me.
I have the Seahawk roster up right now, and you've seen the rosters out here. You can't read that?
No.
Okay. I was going to say,
that's
if you got that, size 4.
Yeah, nobody can
read
that.
Oh, my goodness.
All right, question number one. Let's do 3 good football questions for Brock. I know you consistently keep telling me players like Tebow and Manziel could really impress you if they would just go to Canada. Just go to Canada and prove to the league that you truly want to play. Tim Tebow wouldn't do it.
Nope.
Just was too vain, obviously. Johnny Manziel has done it. He has signed in Canada. Brock, does this impress you?
It does impress me, and this is the only way that he's going to get back into the league. Yeah, Tim Tebow also didn't do it because Good Morning America was going to pay him $5 million to wear skinny suits, and ESPN was going to pay him a few million bucks,
did
and
like the game,
you know,
huh?
even the New York Mets were going to give him the opportunity to play. He had other chances. Johnny Manziel does not necessarily. Now he's also hired by Barstool Sports, so that will be rather fascinating to see how he kind of navigates that world. And the NFL, I'm sure, will be keeping an eye and an ear on a lot of that. But this is how you get back in the league. Yes. Does it impress me? Yes. Get back in the league. He signs with the Hamilton Tiger Cats. He was watching practice yesterday. He's obviously got to play. It's not just getting there and signing up to have your name in the headlines. He's got to go play. His game should flourish in Canada. His game should absolutely thrive in the space and the creativity and the movement and everything that he can do there. And, yeah, I do believe if he excels there, he's going to at least give himself the opportunity to get back in the door of the NFL, a door which has been closed for the last year plus.
All right, question number two. Bobby Wagner will join us at 8:30. I'm looking forward to sitting down with Bobby. Is he the type of player, or how, I guess I would say, how do you build a defense around a player like Bobby Wagner?
Yeah, the defense is not going to change. What's going to change and what builds is his voice. We started to feel that at the end of last year. You know, you've got a famous quote in our system, in fact. It was Earl that challenged and questioned whether Bobby should have been playing basically on one leg. And that was against the Rams.
I think the guys that play, you know, you got to give your heads off to, you know, legs. And, you know, a couple of guys that play. But, you know, my personal opinion, I think all they should have played. You know, the backups, what they did, you know, this is good.
Bobby didn't like that. In fact, you quote him all the time, so... about, you know, your name in my mouth and everything else. He wasn't
keep my name out your mouth. Keep my name out your mouth.
That's exactly what Bobby said, at least via Twitter, to the public about Earl. That's kind of the first little step. I know it's kind of fun and we kind of joke about it, but that's the first little step there publicly. If Earl's going to confront and challenge him, Bobby didn't like to hear that. You kidding me? The backups aren't going to do what I can do, even at 50%. The scheme won't change. Brady Henderson made a good point. The defensive coordinator is who? Ken Norton, a former middle linebacker. So, yes, there will be a comfort there. But more than anything, it's the voice of Bobby that's going to continue to grow.
All right, question number three. UW, very successful so far under Chris Peterson. What does that do for the Pac-12 to have Washington be good?
Yes, it's elevating everybody around them, much like Oregon had to elevate everybody's game around them and pay Chris Peterson $4 million and get him out of Boise to compete. Mario Cristobal, and I've heard this from a number of different people, obviously G. Scott as well as others, they're recruiting their butt off. Mario Cristobal is doing what Jim Harbaugh did at Stanford, and that is a relentless pursuit 24/7, 365 of recruiting. I think that tired. I think that wore out after Chip Kelly and the scheme and the people stayed the same. Helfrich and company, they bring in a Cristobal who comes from Saban's background, and it is relentless. And over the weekend, a couple four-star players out of Southern California going to remake their way up to Eugene. They're doing some things in the recruiting circles.
Good stuff. That's today's Coors
Lights.
Wait,
Mike, what was the question you asked?
What has UW's success under Peterson done to the Pac-12?
And it's Chris Peterson has helped Oregon's recruiting, was the answer?
It's elevated the game in the recruiting world of everybody else around them. What? Is this a bitter wazoo? What?
No, but Chris Peterson doesn't get credit for Oregon landing four stars.
Washington.
That is where you really lose me.
Washington responds to Oregon's success and pays Chris Peterson $4 million. Oregon has a decision to make, Kyle, last offseason of who they're going to hire as a coach. And you're going to compete with Chris Peterson. How are you going to compete with him? Well, how are you going to compete against him?
Kyle,
we're going to make sure we get a guy that recruits his butt off 24/7, 365.
Kyle, this is totally on me. I would have been there ready to call him out with you. I just didn't know who Mario Cristobal was.
I was like, wait, Mike must have asked a different question. If this is the answer, then the question must have been different than what I'm looking for.
Brock said Mario Cristobal, and I said, I don't know who that is. I just kind of tuned out. That was the end of the conversation.
Well, again, your vision is perfect. Your name and memory, not so much.
Yeah.
Were you really could see Kitty Cat from that far away?
It's not even close.
And Haley Heward?
Not a problem.
That is amazing.
I have very
you
good
are
eyes.
Gifted.
No idea who Mario Cristobal is, okay. I can tell you that much. Coming up next, Gene Segura has played like a madman since Robinson Cano got hurt, but I'll tell you what, his greatest moment, Brock, is not a hit. It was not a play in the field, but I'll tell you what it was. Next, I'm Brock and Salk.